From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 2 years ago, CNN's top business journalist Lou Dobbs was known for his popular coverage of the financial markets on his nightly show Moneyline and the stock market advice in his newsletter and weekly columns. He was friendly with CEOs and even occasionally criticized for asking them softball questions on air. Sometime last year, Lou Dobbs lost the softball and became a no-holds-barred crusader on air and everywhere against the outsourcing of U.S. jobs abroad. Tonight on Point, Lou Dobbs on his furious argument with outsourcing. But first, we begin in Washington, where a report by the chief U.S. arms inspector in Iraq was released today, contradicting the administration's rationale for going to war in Iraq over weapons of mass destruction. Here's what Charles Delfer, head of the Iraq Survey Group, had to say today before the Senate Armed Services Committee.
It is clear that Saddam chose not to have weapons at a point in time before the war.
Faye Bowers is national security correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She joins us now from Washington. Faye, can you lay out the major findings of Charles Delfer's report?
Yes, he basically found that rather than the Saddam Hussein regime being a gathering threat, it was actually a diminishing threat. He had no stockpiles of chemical or biological weapons, no ongoing programs, no nuclear weapons program. In fact, he said the nuclear weapons program was in worse shape in 2003 than it was in 1991.
And how was this received by the Senate committee today? I guess it was closed door, but what do you know?
No, it was open.
Oh, was it open?
It was an open hearing,
mm-hmm.
Yes, it was open, and I think it ran on C-SPAN as well. I think, you know, it broke down, the questioning broke down traditionally along political lines. I think, you know, the Republicans tried to pound home the point that Saddam Hussein never did give up his intent. In fact, you know, he always had a desire. He had regional ambitions. He wanted to be a player in the world, and he thought, you know, the one way to do that was by meeting any other threat head on. And so, you know, he wanted to retain the intellectual capital, the know-how for reinstituting his programs if there ever came a day when he could do it.
So and did the survey group give ammunition to that perspective on Saddam Hussein in their report today?
A bit, yeah, a bit, because Charlie Delfer, the head of the Iraq Survey Group who wrote the report, said that Saddam always did have the desire. However, you know, one of the interesting things to me was that he viewed Iran as much more of a threat to him than he did either Israel or the United States. And he always wanted to match Iran's programs. And so, you know, when you think about it, it makes sense. Regionally, going back to the 70s, the Shah of Iran was pursuing a nuclear weapons program, as was Hussein, and the U.S. knew about it. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting point.
But that's only about really intent. The report saying today that Iraq had essentially destroyed its illicit weapons capability within months of the Persian Gulf War, 1991, and its capacity, what we're hearing is to produce such weapons even further eroded by the American invasion in 2003.
That's absolutely right. That he had really no ability to do anything. In fact, Charlie Delfer said that the nuclear program had decayed so badly that it would be many years before he was able to reconstitute a program had the sanctions been lifted and had the U.S. not invaded.
Faye, how do you think this is going to play out? We see the New York Times already calling this report the starkest portrayal yet of a vast gap between the Bush administration's pre-war assertions about Iraqi weapons and what this 15-month post-invasion inquiry by American investigators concluded were the facts on the ground. Is it purely partisan? What about the Republicans who have already been expressing concern over the direction of the war in Iraq, Richard Lugar and others? Are they saying this is damning or not?
Right. It'll be interesting in the next few days to see. You know, the report just hit this afternoon. It didn't. The hearing didn't begin until 2:30, and the report wasn't made public until about a half hour after that. So, and it's 1,500 pages. So it's a lot for people to kind of sort through immediately. So I think, you know, in the next few days we'll see. I think you know it certainly reinforces the point that Iraq was not a gathering threat, and you would be sure that the Democrats would make political hay from that. How the Republicans will stand is another issue. I think they will continue to sort of portray Saddam is a dangerous being and that the world is better off with him behind bars.
But a difficult week, I would think, for the Republican campaign between Paul Bremer's comments, Secretary Rumsfeld's comments, and now this, as you say, characterizing Iraq's weapons as a diminishing, not a gathering threat. That is not the language we've heard from President Bush and Dick Cheney.
Absolutely. I think they've had, as you say, a really hard week, if not a hard month or so in Iraq with the daily bad news streaming out of there. And now, you know, former members of the administration, remember David Kaye, too, who was Charlie Delfer's predecessor, quit the Iraq Survey Group because he was definite then that there would be no weapons found and that the intelligence community had it starkly wrong that there were no weapons capabilities in Iraq.
And the report today confirming that. Faye Bowers, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Faye Bowers is national security correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She spoke with me from Washington. For more than a year now, lifelong Republican, famously pro-business, CNN news anchor Lou Dobbs has been turning his show and his columns over to a furious drumbeat of arguments against outsourcing.
Also ahead, exporting America, why American companies could soon be exporting American jobs to Russia, as well as India and China, and the list goes on, unfortunately.
CNN's financial newsman has turned fiery crusader. He regularly takes corporate guests to task for their overseas hiring. He rails against government policies that help move jobs to China and India. His website indignantly lists pages of companies that are outsourcing jobs. Critics say he's taken his campaign too far for a market enthusiast, too far for a journalist. Economists say he's misjudged what's happening, and we'll hear from one of them tonight. But Mr. Dobbs is not backing down. This hour, On Point, the evolution of Lou Dobbs and the outsourcing of American jobs. Have you heard Lou Dobbs' fury on CNN? Are you with him, or is he missing something? Is the outsourcing of U.S. jobs just a natural response to the market, an inevitable development, and ultimately good for all? Or is there a kind of crime underway here? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Lou Dobbs, host of CNN's Lou Dobbs Tonight, regular columnist for U.S. News and World Report and Money Magazine, and author of the new book, Exporting America, Why Corporate Greed is Shipping American Jobs Overseas. Good evening, and welcome, Lou Dobbs.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to be with you. You're pounding home the point night after night. I didn't get to see your report tonight. Did you have fresh news on this evening's report from the outsourcing front, Lou?
Well, of course we did, Tom. In point of fact, focusing on something that seems as frivolous as The Simpsons, but the fact is that the animation taking place in South Korea, again, the reason, not efficiency, productivity, global competitiveness, but rather taking place in South Korea because animation and animators work cheaper.
And cheaper labor is what you say it's all about. Lou Dobbs, before we finish here, we want to understand the evolution of how you came to this point, but I want to have you first just make your core argument. We're going to hear later in this hour and have a chance to hear you talk with Randall Krosner, an economist at the University of Chicago. You know what the economists say about this, that this is the way of all things market-driven, that there's competitive advantages in different nations and that ultimately it turns out all to the good for everybody. I know there's dissent with that. We had Paul Samuelson on last week, and he's saying, wait a minute, this may not turn out to the net benefit of the United States, but what's your core argument against outsourcing?
Well, Paul Samuelson, as you know, Tom, is a recent, if you will, convert from the orthodoxy. If one can be a convert from the orthodoxy, perhaps that makes him a heretic. But Paul Samuelson, 3 weeks ago, writing in the Economic Perspectives Journal, declared that free trade, as practiced by current policies, does not assure in any way that the United States will be a winner. And he declared, breaking further with the orthodoxy, that outsourcing is not a brilliant idea.
But we talked at some length with him last week. He says he's held this since 72. It's just gotten lost in the shuffle. And he also says there are good kinds of innovation and even outsourcing and bad kinds. Your critique has been pretty much a broadside. What's the heart of it, Lou Dobbs?
The heart of it is this, very simply, Tom. The fact is that the middle class of this country has been put into direct competition with cheap foreign labor. It has been put in that position by the immense, unprecedented, unparalleled power of corporate America in our political system, and there is no countervailing influence to that power In point of fact, it reaches to both parties, Republicans as well as Democrats. And at stake is our middle class, the most diverse, the largest number of people in this country, and, in my judgment, both the foundation and the future of the country. And it being the outsourcing of jobs to cheap labor markets, has to be stopped, period, or the nation itself is at risk.
Now, here's the thing. You say it's been put in competition with cheap labor around the world by, I guess, outsized, uncontrolled U.S. corporate power. But, of course, the classic argument is, no, it's been put in competition with cheap labor by the market, capital M, global market.
Right. This is one of the, you know, obviously this is one of the principal precepts of the laissez-faire, free trade at any cost crowd. That crowd is made up now, obviously, of most, if not all, of corporate America, not quite all. Both parties, with a splinter group now being led by Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards, that had been represented for years by Congressman Dick Gephardt, suggesting that perhaps there are political interests that should have primacy over economic issues, and certainly that the market should always be subordinate to the political interest of both working men and women in this country as well as the nation itself, that there is something greater, if you will, at stake here than economic theory and economic ideology.
Of course, you know, we've been taught at this point, most Americans from diapers, that there is nothing bigger than the market, bigger than economic forces, and that ultimately everybody bends to them. I want to go back to how you came around to this position, Lou. You were so famously and in a kind of enthusiast for business, for everything that it could create.
Well, I'm still an enthusiast for business. I am an absolute believer in the free enterprise democracy that has been built in this country over 200 years. I'm also an avowed, devoted opponent of criminals, whether they be in a white collar or a blue or no collar at all. And I'm also a deep enemy of those who do not who are simply indifferent to the well-being of all Americans. I have a very simple view: either this economy works for all Americans, or it doesn't work at all. And we have to get this economy, this society, on track.
And what was it that brought you around to where your trigger was really flipped here? You know, sometime after 9/11, you, of course, immediately you began covering that and larger issues on your show.
Sure.
And then you got into a kind of series of things on high unemployment, on the workaholic problem for some Americans, on going broke in America. Outsourcing wasn't high on your list, and you came to it. What was the path?
The path was straightforward, in my opinion. I've reported on the political economy for the past 20-some-odd years, mm-hmm. in point of fact. I was critical of pro forma accounting. Much of the Internet technology telecommunications boom through the late 90s into 2000. But I suppose that the turning point for me precisely would have been with the Enron scandal and the corporate criminal scandals of 2001-2002, and the failure of this economy and the failure of corporate America to respond to a desperate need to create jobs. We had just left a decade in which we had created 22 million jobs in this country, Tom, and suddenly we were being told at the end of the recession of 2001 that, in point of fact, American workers were not sufficiently educated, that they did not have the skills, the education, the training to be competitive, to be productive. These were the same men and women who simply 2 years before, had been part of the greatest explosion in job creation in this country and had driven more innovation in technology and telecommunications than ever before.
And Lou Dobbs just wasn't having it. We're going to hear a lot more. We're talking tonight with CNN host turned anti-outsourcing crusader Lou Dobbs. His new book is Exporting America, Why Corporate Greed is Shipping American Jobs Overseas. How about it? Have you heard Lou Dobbs' fury with outsourcing on CNN? Are you with him, or is he missing something? Is the outsourcing of American jobs just natural, just the market? Is it inevitable? Or is there some kind of swindle underway here, some kind of crime against the nation? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be back with Lou Dobbs. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight with the red, white, and blue pro-business money advisor, Lou Dobbs, the CNN anchor who's gone, well, I don't know, rabid on the outsourcing of American jobs. He's out with a new book called Exporting America. You can join our conversation tonight. Have you lost a job to workers in India, China, the Philippines? Could it have been saved? Should it have been saved? And is Lou Dobbs fighting the tide of history and open competition here? Is this just contemporary protectionism he's calling for? Or is there something new and uniquely dangerous going on today, something Americans should oppose? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. In the debate last night, Dick Cheney, John Edwards was certainly opposing outsourcing. He had this jab at the GOP.
They're for outsourcing jobs. I want to make sure people hear that. It's a fundamental difference with us. The administration says over and over that the outsourcing of millions of American jobs is good. We're against it.
John Edwards, last night in the debate, Lou Dobbs, have you been watching this as an issue in the presidential campaign? How do you think it's playing, unfolding?
I think it's a stark contrast between the two candidates, between the two tickets, certainly the four candidates. The truth is that I would like to see the Democratic candidates be even more forceful. Inversely, I would love to see the Republican candidates come to their senses and say that this is not the correct policy to follow, and that the middle class of this country is too important. The pain, the suffering of American working men and women as a result of the protectionist policies of so-called free traders is causing such dislocation and such inequity in our society that it has to be stopped.
Fill in this picture. You paint corporate America as a real villain here, whereas economists would point to the market, to the globalized
right.
economy. But you say right. that you suggest or say outright that there's a kind of swindle or villainy here. What is it?
No, Tom, I've never called a CEO of any one of the companies that outsources a name, a dirty name, a nasty name.
Well, I don't mean that you're throwing stones, but you're saying they're doing something wrong.
Oh, I'm saying that they're doing something utterly unconscionable in when they kill an American job, create such pain and suffering for an American worker who returns to his or her family and has to deal with an economic statement that it's the market that's responsible. You know, just as corporations don't pay taxes, as corporate America is fond of saying, you know, neither do corporations and the market make these decisions. Individuals are making these decisions, the leaders of these corporations, and they need to find a conscience and understand what they're doing. Joe Stiglitz, a Nobel Prize winning economist, you mentioned Paul Samuelson, a Nobel Prize winning economist, these two have stepped forward to say, please, the orthodoxy is rent by just simple deceit itself in academia, whether it be in academia or politics or corporate America. You know, Tom, the fact is, you were talking about the progression on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is that when you are 3.5 years from the beginning of the term of this president, we're looking at 900,000 jobs lost. People have a responsibility to ask, why is it that this president would be the first since Herbert Hoover to have lost net jobs in the course of 4 years? And certainly there are complications and difficulties and challenges, beginning with September 11th and its impact on the economy, a shift from the telecommunications and technology bubble of the late 90s. But the fact of the matter is, those 900,000 jobs that are net lost now, that's a million families alone who are not sharing in the prosperity of America.
But Lou Dobbs, what are you saying is wrong with the picture? If this is clearly in part driven by economic competition, but you're suggesting sure. there's something malicious, something manipulated here. You point to sky-high CEO salaries on the one hand and
absolutely.
Outsourcing on the other. Well, what's the connection? Are you saying that they're not just playing by the straightforward economic rules? You've done pretty well in this economy yourself, working class roots, but you've done pretty well. When you're down at the country club or when you run into the CEOs, do they say to you, Lou, have you forgotten what the global economy means?
Yeah, I've had a few CEOs say to me far more than that in far tougher terms, Tom, as you might
getting
suspect.
Getting out the nine iron and coming after you, Lou Dobbs.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The fact of the matter is, the CEOs who are making these decisions are doing so because other CEOs are making these decisions. The Business Roundtable, which represents 150 of the largest corporations in the country, instead of choosing to talk about this issue, started calling me names and created personal attacks. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has been more civil but is adamant about insisting that outsourcing is good for America.
You've been called anti-trade. You've been called, it's been said you're on a jihad.
A jihad. I mean, I've been called a demotic sensationalist, which is somewhat redundant in point of fact. But the truth of the matter is, this is not a situation in which laissez-faire economics trumps American political values. It is not a situation in which we should permit Mr. Market to suddenly take precedence over the United States Constitution and every traditional value that's made this country great. That's why we elect a Congress. That's why we have a United States government that is not simply deferential to the market. That's why we have antitrust laws. It's why we have an IRS. It's why we have an SEC. That's why we have police officers on the streets, because we understand that the nature of man being what it is, imbalances will occur, transgressions will occur, crimes will occur. Mm. And the fact of the matter is there is no countervailing influence to the political influence, the political power of corporate America. In my opinion, Tom, the political power of corporate America today is far greater than it was during the era of the robber barons. Because at least during that era, we had Teddy Roosevelt in the White House. Mm.
We've got to get our callers in here and then get a debate going here. Let's turn first to Raleigh, North Carolina. Willis is calling. Hi, Willis. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Just
my
great.
Name is Willis McCoy, and I'm from Raleigh. And I find it very interesting conversation that you have going on tonight. One of the most pervasive things I hear is that you have a Republican on here that is.
Are you there, Willis? Ooh, it sounds like we may have lost Willis and Raleigh, but I think it sounds like he's about to say we've got a Republican on who's going hammer and tongs after trade. Are you still comfortable in the Republican tent, Lou Dobbs?
Am I comfortable in it? No, not particularly, because, frankly, the tent has moved a bit. I came to the party as what was styled as a Rockefeller Republican. Mm. I am and have been always a fiscal conservative. I believe in prudent administration of the government's finances, and also socially liberal. I happen to be in a party that is moving rather quickly away from most of the tenets that form over the course of my lifetime my basic philosophy, which I thought was consonant with Republicans. By the way, the Democrats, I'm probably no more comfortable in that tent either. I'm probably the best example of an independent right now that one can be.
Feeling a little lonely, maybe.
Not lonely at all, because the people I talk with and their viewers, they talk about the fact that the Democratic Party is not strongly advancing the interests of working men and women in this country. The World Trade Organization, NAFTA, which are basically protectionist measures to protect the interest of corporate America and outsource jobs, those were formed under the Clinton administration. Ask Congressman Dick Gephardt how comfortable he is with the record of the 90s for the Democratic Party. One hopes that these candidates are going to form a new initiative, Senator Edwards and Senator Kerry, and one has every reason to expect so. But both parties have been so beholden to corporate America, Tom, that we need a real departure here and a real energy behind the representation of middle-class interests in this country, whether it's in education, whether it is in international trade, whether it's on the issue of outsourcing. The well-being of working men and women in this country, in my judgment, hasn't been this threatened since the Great Depression.
We're talking with Lou Dobbs. His new book is Exporting America, Why Corporate Greed is Shipping American Jobs Overseas. We've got to get some economist pushback here, Lou, and we've got it on the line from the University of Chicago. Good. Randall Krosner joins us. He is professor of economics at the University of Chicago School of Business, co-author of Explorations in the New Monetary Economics, a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors, 2001 to 2003. Randall Krosner, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me on.
So you've heard Lou Dobbs tonight, and you can hear him most every night on this theme. He says, and you just heard it, we cannot have Mr. Market taking precedence over everything that has made this country Great. You're the economist at the University of Chicago, of all places, Randall Krosner. What's your response?
Well, I would have to say that what has made the country great is allowing market forces to have a very important impact on the way the overall economy evolves. In particular, just think about the massive transformations that have occurred in the U.S. over the last 100 years. We had been an agricultural economy, primarily agriculture. I think if Mr. Dobbs had been on television, and there had been a television back then, we were making the transition from agriculture to manufacturing, he would have been very concerned, and I think justifiably concerned, about the transition, the difficulties of moving from an agricultural-based economy to a manufacturing-based economy.
Slums in the cities, farm prices falling, and so on.
But we were able to do that quite successfully without massive unemployment. And then we've made another major transformation in the U.S. from a manufacturing economy to primarily a service economy. And once again, one without major disruption, one without mass unemployment.
Well, we had pretty high unemployment, and you had an awful lot of steel workers who were out of work. You had areas of the country that were hit awfully hard, I'm sure they would tell you.
In the transition, there may be some people who be out of work, much as in the transition from the agriculture to manufacturing economy, there would be people out of work.
So, are you saying there's nothing different this time around, Randall Krosner? We should just hold on to our hats, and this will all right itself, and Americans themselves will end up better off, or at least not worse off.
Well, actually, I think there is something that is very different. There's a much, much bigger safety net for people who are unemployed, and particularly people who are hit by trade-related unemployment. We have the Trade Adjustment Assistance Act, which the President has supported and is well-funded to provide special support for people in transition. So today, actually, the transition from one type of an economy to another is much easier than it once was. But most importantly, I think, in the focus on outsourcing is that it's just not a big issue. Regardless of whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, the number of jobs that move offshore is a very, very small number of jobs. Even the much touted Forrester survey that really got people quite excited about this,
yeah,
and that we could lose 3.3 million jobs abroad over a 15-year horizon. Well, those are very small numbers when you start to think about the size of the U.S. economy. There are 130 million people employed in the U.S. today. Over the next 15 years, it's likely to be 150 million people who will be employed. The movement of 300,000 jobs per year off of, or 200,000 to 300,000 jobs a year overseas is a very small number. That's not to say that the people who are losing jobs should not be taken care of.
Okay.
We have to be
okay.
Very concerned about them.
We've got. I want to hear more from you, Professor Krosner. But let me get Lou Dobbs just to respond to this. Lou Dobbs, this is the way of the world. Always has been. Nothing particularly new here now, except that it's easier for workers now because they're better supported, and the number of jobs going abroad so small. Why is Lou Dobbs even shouting about it?
Well, one of the reasons Lou Dobbs is shouting about it is, you know, and as the professor suggests, we do have a period of transition in which I was on television and covering, and that is moving from, if you will, a postmodern economy that is manufacturing, which we lost nearly 20 million jobs in manufacturing during the course of the transition from the 80s to the 90s with the assurance that technology would create high-value jobs. And that's precisely, by the way, what we judged to be occurring in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't protest that, and perhaps I should have, but the fact of the matter is I did not protest it because 22 million jobs were created in the 90s. Now in the 2000s, the same labor force has lost a million net jobs as the labor force has grown, in point of fact, and the professor's quite right. It's a growing, dynamic workforce. The problem is, in 4 years, we're down a million jobs, not up 5 million. The issue of it's easier now to rationalize this because of the Trade Adjustment Act, Professor? Come on, $250 million to support all that is occurring. We've lost 750,000 jobs over the course of the past 10 years to NAFTA alone, net. The dislocations are significant. $250 million hardly covers it. And we have people saying, well, you're going to train for this. We're going to educate you. But not one person, Professor, has been able to tell me or anyone else what job should they train for, what education should they get, because what jobs will be there.
Randall Krosner?
Well, first, I don't know where Mr. Dobbs has gotten those numbers from. The academic studies, the systematic empirical studies, so people who actually look at the data in a careful way have not found net job loss due to NAFTA. It's one that has been a win-win-win situation for Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. What we find is that, and also there's a recent study from the IMF based on IMF data and international data, showing that where there has been more outsourcing in the U.S., more jobs moving abroad, the sectors where this seems to be occurring most, if you look over an annual period of, there may be some jobs lost in the beginning of the year, but jobs are created later in the year in those same sectors. So we've not been seeing particularly hard-hitting job losses in those sectors.
Randall Carson, let me ask you, just because I know you guys could fight over the numbers, but I want to get to the heart of this. Lou Dobbs said something earlier, and you heard it. He said there comes a point where the political interest has to be seen as greater than the market. In other words, let's put the political machinery of this country together to protect workers, even if it has to resist the market. As an economist, can you see such a point? Are we at such a point? Does it ever exist?
That would be the best way to harm American consumers by doing precisely that. Because something that Mr. Dobbs seems to ignore is that middle-class workers are also middle-class consumers. There's been a dramatic reduction in the cost of many products and increase in the quality of many products that the people in the middle class are consuming.
So nothing new under the sun. Americans, sit tight. This is all going to work out for your benefit in the end. Is that the message?
No. It has already worked out for their benefit. One, focusing on outsourcing is a very odd thing to do because it's such a small phenomena. To focus on this as something important or first order is really quite odd if one actually looks at the data.
Professor, could I ask a question, Tom?
Lou, we've just got a minute and a half, so make it a fast one if you can before the break. Lou,
one, if it's so odd that one would focus on something so small, the University of California, Berkeley says 14 million jobs are at risk to outsourcing over the course of the next 10 years. In point of fact, corporate America is saying from both the ITAA to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, we're talking about an increase in the accelerated rate of this. We think that there's over a million jobs that have been outsourced over the course of the past year and a half. We've got 200,000 businesses, subsidiaries, and parent corporations that are outsourcing. The idea that you would attempt to minimize this raises the question, why is corporate America reacting so violently? Why is the Bush administration reacting so violently if it's such a minor item?
Randall Carlson?
Because the responses could cripple U.S. enterprise.
God's sake.
What do you mean exactly, Professor?
Okay, thank you. The types of taxes and responses that would make it difficult for firms to choose to produce where it is most productive for them to produce will cripple them internationally. Just think about IBM, for example, a company that's often been cited for moving jobs overseas. If it can't move those jobs overseas to be able to produce less expensively in competition with Samsung, Sony, others, will IBM continue to be able to be a prosperous company? Will it be able to employ people in the U.S.?
Randall Custer, hold the thought. We have to take a short break. Lou Dobbs will hear from you when we come back. Listeners, you can join us as well. What's your verdict on outsourcing? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with CNN host turned anti-outsourcing crusader Lou Dobbs. His new book is Exporting America. We're also joined tonight from the University of Chicago by Professor Randall Krosner, professor of economics at the University of Chicago School of Business. You can join us as well at 1-800-423-8255. Paula is calling from Boston. Hi, Paula. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have to say that this is a great and timely program. And if the professor thinks that outsourcing is not a big deal, he should try being one of the people that has been outsourced.
What's your story, Paula?
I was. Well, I'm in the software industry as a software development manager, and about 2.5 years ago, my position, along with a third of our development organization, was outsourced.
One third to where? To where, Paula?
Primarily to India.
And what did your management say when they did it?
This was a cost savings, and we had to look at it from the standpoint of the overall benefit of the company.
Have you found another job? Are you making the same kind of money?
It took me 2 years. We went through all of our savings. We almost lost our house. I'm at a lower level than I was in my last job, but I have a job.
So
and in my position, I'm sorry.
Yes, in your position now?
And in my position now, I have to bring contractors in, and I'm being told to prove why I ought not to bring offshore contractors in.
So the same dynamic is still running through your fingers right today. Paula, thank you very much for your call. Let's get another caller right away. Chuck is calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to say, first of all, that I had never listened to Lou Dobbs before until there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about him saying what he was doing, and I was amazed and decided to tune in, and he's become kind of a hero of mine because he's brought one expert in after another, and he does his homework, and by God, he really puts them to shame for the most part. I mean, he's the only one in the media that's doing this, and I hope he drags more people into it.
But Randall Krosner says not that many jobs are going. Don't get excited. You're going to kill the economy with this view.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. What does he say, 14 million in the next 10 years?
That was Lou's figure.
Just 14 million jobs.
Yep.
No, there's no possibility of that.
Well,
Professor, since you used in a rather snide term the word empiricism, refer to the University of California, Berkeley from October of last year, if you would.
Which is the source of your 14 million number. Chuck, thanks very much for your call. Let me get one more here. Rishi calling from Westchester, New York. Hi, Rishi. You're on the air.
Hi. It's really saddening to see anybody lose a job. I've gone through a couple of job losses. However, outsourcing also creates a lot of opportunities for American exports. There's a great amount of American cultural export, technology exports for outsourcing. And my other point is Lou Dobbs also opposed to American companies doing business internationally? I mean, this is international trade. American companies, the multinationals have more than 50% of their profits and business is from international business.
Rishi, we've got it, and thanks very much for your call. Lou Dobbs, how about that point? Can you really build a wall high enough to change this dynamic in a globalized economy?
Tom, this is the absurdity of this discussion that is suggested by the administration, that people are either economic isolationists or protectionists, or they're on board with this free trade at any cost. Here are the facts. This administration, and frankly the administration before it, has failed to open markets and for U.S. goods.
Abroad.
We have abroad. We have approaching a $600 billion trade deficit. We run trade deficits in this country. Professor Randall, you say you're interested in empirical evidence here. Let's talk about 28 years of consecutive trade deficits, $4 trillion in external debt. The fact of the matter is I'm all for international trade, but I believe that we should follow policies similar to those of our principal trading partners, whether it be Japan or China, the United Kingdom, France, or Germany. Mutuality in trade, balanced trade, reasonable reciprocity in trade, not the creating even further dependence on foreign capital to sustain imports while we destroy jobs and our manufacturing base. And the professor talks about technology as one of the principal ways in which we're going to drive the export market. It's utter nonsense. We have lost. We now run a deficit in technology in our current account.
Randall Krosner, just half a minute. We're about to run out of time here. Your big response to this thrust, you know, it's one with a lot of feeling behind it.
I'm sorry?
Your major response to the thrust of this argument?
That the size of the problem is not nearly as large as Mr. Dobbs puts forward. Even if it were to be a larger issue, it's something that is, as we said, part of the natural transition. One of the dirty little secrets that people don't seem to realize is that if you actually look at the amount of job destruction that's occurred since President Bush has come into office, it's not a million jobs. It's more than 100 million jobs. But approximately 100 million jobs have been generated also. That's part of the market process that people are constantly moving from one job to another.
And you say keep the doors open, it'll keep working. Lou Dobbs, you've got 30 seconds. A last word goes to you.
1 million jobs have been lost. In point of fact, it's 1.5 million if you take away the only creation of significant jobs, which has been in the public sector, that is for government. The truth is we have to deal with trade policies. We've got to assert representation for the middle class in this country, and we've got to do it soon.
Randall Krosner at the University of Chicago, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Lou Dobbs, we hear your crusade. It's loud and clear. The new book is Exporting America, Why Corporate Greed is Shipping American Jobs Overseas. The debate with The Economist, I'm sure, will go on. But thanks for being with us tonight.
Great to be with you, Tom. Thank you very much, Professor.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. After a shaky performance in the first presidential debate last week, George W. Bush today turned up the heat on his Democratic rival, John Kerry, in a campaign speech in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. The speech had been billed as a major address on medical liability reform, but Bush strategists opted for a more direct attack after a week in which the campaign's momentum seems to have swung toward John Kerry. In Wilkes-Barre, the president dug up some old material to call Kerry a tax and spend liberal and himself a compassionate conservative. And he leveled some of his harshest criticism of Kerry's foreign policy plans to date. Democrats dismissed the speech as an attempt by the president to get a do-over for last Thursday's debate without having John Kerry there to respond. Here's a taste of President Bush's address earlier today.
America's always more secure and freedom is on the march. And freedom is on the march. In Afghanistan, and Iraq, and elsewhere. There will be good days and there will be bad days in the war on terror. But every day, we will show our resolve and we will do our duty. This nation is determined. We will stay in the fight until the fight is won. My opponent agrees with all this, except when he doesn't. Last week in our debate, he once again came down firmly on every side of the Iraq war. He stated that Saddam Hussein was a threat and that America had no business removing that threat. Senator Kerry said our soldiers and Marines are not fighting for a mistake. But also called the liberation of Iraq a colossal error. He said we need to do more to train Iraqis. But he also said we shouldn't be spending so much money over there. He said he wants to hold a summit meeting so he can invite other countries to join what he calls the wrong war in the wrong place at the wrong time. He said terrorists are pouring across the Iraqi border, but also said that fighting those terrorists is a diversion from the war on terror. You hear all that, and you can understand why somebody would make a face.
President Bush speaking earlier today in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. I'm joined now by Jake Schlesinger, political reporter with The Wall Street Journal. Jake, thanks for being with us.
Sure.
You listened to the president's speech today. Did he succeed in scratching back some of what he lost in the debate last week?
That is a really hard question to answer. I mean, clearly among his sympathetic audience in Pennsylvania, he did. And I think the question is whether that will end up persuading the broader audience. First, whether he can get that size group to tune in and whether he can regain some of the credibility that he lost last week. And the Democrats, I think, were very smart to kind of say, you know, don't listen to Bush when he's standing by himself. Wait till he's on a stage with John Kerry.
Jake, how do you interpret the different tone? Here's the president with audibly a very friendly crowd, and he is large and in charge again. He did not look so large and in charge last week. Is this a matter of speechwriter's material that he's got at his fingertips or the friendly crowd? What's the difference?
It's a combination of them. I think also, in retrospect, they probably were a bit overconfident last week. I think that they thought that John Kerry was in a downward spiral, and he was, in a sense, at that point. I think also, as people have pointed out, President Bush has largely been in friendly crowds, and that was a rare occasion, other than perhaps his Meet the Press appearance in the spring, which also didn't go terribly well, where there was someone on a stage who was confronting him directly, which was a big difference. And I'm presuming that they're spending a lot of time this week preparing him for hostile questions, some of which may come from average voters on Friday.
Now, we've had George Bush and John Kerry, and then last night, of course, John Edwards and Dick Cheney. John Edwards saying today that the president and vice president are in denial about what's going on in Iraq. How much do you think the Bush-Cheney line on Iraq has been damaged going into the last 4 weeks before the election, Jake?
You know, that's a really good question. That notion of damaging the Bush-Cheney line in Iraq has been fundamental to the Kerry-Edwards strategy on Iraq. I think that one thing that they had found frustrating coming out of what was a terrible August for them was that President Bush kept on just asserting in a sentence or even a phrase that things are going well in Iraq and moving on. And they saw a real opportunity, to be crass about it, that's not a word you necessarily want to use, but in trying to hammer home that, in fact, things were not going well in Iraq. And I think that they take credit probably, and again, I use that word a little bit hesitantly, the word credit, but they do take credit, and I think with some justification, for helping shift the focus of the news media back to the problems in Iraq and not glossing over that. That is a problem for the president. It puts a harsher spotlight on a lot of questions that they face about how they handled the war.
And this drip torture of reports coming out, including today on Iraq's arms program, not so favorable to the Bush-Cheney view. Again, it's not helping them reestablish that case.
Absolutely, and I think in some ways what may have been the most damaging were the comments early this week, both by Mr. Bremer, who after all was the administration appointee.
Saying we never had enough troops.
In Iraq, and Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld himself.
Casting doubt on the terrorist Saddam connection.
Right.
Al-Qaeda Saddam.
Exactly. I mean, I think, though, you don't want to go too far in that direction, which is that if you look at polls, President Bush still does extremely well compared to Senator Kerry on who would better handle terrorism. And I think that's one reason why, in his speech today in particular, what they keep trying to say and what Vice President Cheney tried to do last night, perhaps not as effectively as they'd wanted, but I think hit it a lot harder than President Bush did in the debate last week, was to keep saying, look, you can't isolate this one war. Maybe there were some mistakes in how we handled it, although neither of them did acknowledge that there were mistakes. But there is a fundamental strategic view that we have, which is you have to have a more preemptive, more proactive approach, and our opponents don't. So we might have messed up in this case, but you have to stick with us on the broader philosophy. That's what they're trying to get through.
In the overall polling, of course, Bush and Kerry running essentially neck and neck now. You're back in Washington. What's the word today on the Cheney-Edwards debate last night? I don't know if won and lost is helpful here, but how's it being characterized, and what about its impact?
The truth is it's probably going to end up being a wash. I think that you could make a good case that one or the other got the better of it, but I think that nobody really is arguing that anyone had a huge advantage in the way that it appeared the Bush-Kerry debate played out in the following days. And in that case, I think it ends up being a wash in particular because you've got the next presidential debate coming on so quickly after, and that will, again, be the focus. I think that, you know, in the end, Vice President Cheney can't really save President Bush. He's got a lot of pressure to perform better than he did last week, and Vice President Cheney's performance doesn't take that pressure off.
John Kerry, quiet today in Colorado, we understand, preparing for that debate on Friday night. Remind us of the format on Friday. It will be a discussion, a wide-open discussion, I guess, on any topic.
It's on domestic and international, and it's supposed to be about evenly divided, and interestingly, beyond that, it's who the questioners are. This is not going to be a journalistic moderator. It's going to be so-called persuadable voters in the audience, to average Americans, if there is such a thing, who've been selected to ask the questions.
So President Bush might have a little bit more of a crowd feel to play to there, or is that expected?
Absolutely. I think that he will definitely have more of a town hall crowd feel, and the conventional wisdom is that President Bush is better than Senator Kerry at connecting with average voters. On the other side, President Bush has been, to the extent that he's had his Ask the President forums, they've been very selected, that he has not been subjected to critical questions. It'll be interesting to see how he handles a question from somebody who's not a staunch supporter.
So the heat is on for everyone Friday night. Jake Schlesinger with The Wall Street Journal, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.